Hi, I'm Chad Hughes, and you're listening to Elevated Access, the Inside Story. This episode, I met with Nicola Holumby, an instructor and coordinator at Olds College, which is a leading institution dedicated to training access professionals. Having started her career in land access, Nicola shares her path to instructor and the work she did leading up to that. She shares how the Olds College program prepares students for success and highlights the abilities that tend to elevate them to the top of their class. She talks about mindset and how it can be a differentiator for students, and she explains the role that industry has in the program's success. She shares insights that students and industry stakeholders will be interested in hearing. So let's tune in now to the conversation with Nicola. Nicola, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chad, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, Nicola, many of us have been through the Olds College Land Agent Program. I think when I went through the program, it was referred to as the Land Acquisition and Management Program. Like most things, you know, the program has evolved over the years, and today we're going to talk about how it's evolved. Before we do that, before we get into that, I think it would be great if you'd tell our audience a bit about your background.
Sure. So I haven't always been at Olds College, although for some people it may feel like I've been here a long time. I came to the college years ago as a student. I actually found out about the land agent career when I'd finished my first degree. I took a job with Shell, and I was working on a customer service bilingual line because I speak French as well. And I had a farmer phone in who was very upset with some things that had happened recently on his land. And we had a slow day in the call center, so I was speaking with him. And I thought, I'm going to escort this one upstairs. Like usually you just, you know, computer file it and it goes to the next department to handle it. So I went upstairs, and I can't remember who I spoke to that day. I always wish I remember exactly which landman it was, but I started talking to them about the kind of work they did. I'd always lived in an agricultural area and stuff, and I was really interested in what he was talking about. And so he said, well, you know, you should check out Olds College. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to, because I do not want to sit in this call center and get swore at in both languages starting at 5 o'clock in the morning to serve Eastern Canada. I'm ready for a team. Cubicle thing wasn't my style. So I looked into it, and it was I was really excited about it. So that's how I actually got into land agent studies, I guess you'd say. And I came to school here and did my 2 years and graduated and ended up working a couple of summer jobs. And then I went up to Edmonton and did some work with the utility companies, and it was Battle River Enterprise at the time with Wendell and Mert. And yeah, so I had exposure to a whole bunch of different things. Imperial Oil was really good to me as a summer student. For the 2 years I was in the program, I worked full summers for them and worked some old fields, right? And get lots of experience, Redwater, Leduc, Devon, right, all through in there. Yeah, and so it's funny now, some of my students say, they'll text me and say, I saw your name on some old files here. Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of fun. Yeah. And so I worked and did that kind of thing. And then things slowed down a little bit. And we were all at that time sitting around the fax machine waiting for jobs to come through. And I thought, yuck, I'm not liking this. This is kind of stressful. I got to make a switch here. And then I happened to have a health crisis. I ended up with cancer. I left the Edmonton area and moved back home. I picked up a job doing reclamation actually that summer while I was going through all this testing and stuff, and then got confirmation what I was dealing with and went through that whole process and continued to do this kind of reclamation and reporting stuff on the side and learned a lot about that. That was a steep learning curve, I'll tell you. I was down in Bow Island. I messed my first rattlesnake down there. It was, but it's really interesting now because when I teach these kinds of courses, I can bring some of those stories forward, right? And then I decided to go back to school, and I didn't want to fight rattlesnakes anymore, and I felt healthy enough to pull it off. So I went back to school and I did an ed after degree. It was at U of A, but through Red Deer College. So it was nice and close. I was living in Olds. and finished that up and went to school teaching middle school for a couple of years. And then I got headhunted for this job out of that. So it's sort of a marriage of two things, somebody said to me once. And I thought, yeah, it kind of is, you know. So I do have that land background. And then I've lived in this community now for, I don't know, 20-ish years. And yeah, good farming community and lots of growing opportunities here too. So it's been really good for me and my family.
Yeah, you know what? It just occurred to me that so much about your background that I thought I knew, I didn't. How many years were you working between the industry work and then the teaching before you ended up at Olds?
I think there was about 3 years in there.
Yeah.
All I know is there's probably more kilometers than years. I just remember bombing everywhere in my truck.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah.
Yeah.
The of course, when we were first starting out in this industry, that the kilometers are, you know,
huge.
Those are huge. Yeah. The and where's home? Where's the what ag community did you grow up in?
So I'm in Olds now. At the time we were in Calgary and my dad farmed near Rocky Mountain House.
Okay.
So yeah, we ran cattle up there too.
Yeah, awesome. So I'm curious, and I often ask this of our guests, a question around philosophy. And, you know, those first few years that you were working in the industry, were there some philosophies that you gained or picked up as a result of the work you were doing?
I think so. You know, I think one thing I really learned, because I was working in an old field and people had had a lot of historical things happen on their land, and some were less enthusiastic about a land agent visiting them than others, let's just say. And I think I just learned to listen and not cut off their stories. You know what I mean? And really recognize that that was forming part of what we were dealing with today, and accepting that, not trying to change that. Just listen, hear them out, and then redirect our conversation in a kind way, a respectful way. I think that's probably one of my biggest insights. And asking the right kinds of questions, which don't come if you don't listen. You know, I learned a really valuable lesson. There was a lady who was terrified to have workers work along the edge of her land. And it took a long time, but finally we just, the senior trainer was with me and he said, you know, do you mind me asking you why? I really sense you're, you know, worried about this. And this took a lot of visits to even get to this point, I'll just say. And then we finally learned that she had lost her son in that river. And she was terrified that workers might also go off the edge and in, and somebody else would die there. And so it took a long time to really get to the crux of the problem. But if we hadn't listened, I'm not sure we would have ever gotten there, because the door was slammed pretty tight at the beginning, right? So just those kinds of lessons, right?
Yeah. Wow. What a great insight for you.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find that place of understanding when we're meeting people and building that rapport. So important. So when Olds College recruited you, what was it about that opportunity that you thought fit? I sense it's probably a result of you worked in the industry and then you were in a teaching role, but was there more to it than that?
I think, you know, just my history, like I had gone to the college, it had been a really positive experience for me, and I like working with youth, right? So this was just a little bit older youth and they just have a little more money and a few more toys, but they're actually still really creative, like junior high students were. I still maintain that. And so it just felt right for me and I didn't want to leave the area. I tried corporate Calgary, wasn't really my thing. I'd done okay at it, but I didn't want to spend the rest of my life doing that. Yeah. So it was just a really good fit for me. And I'd been at that school for, I don't know, 5 years maybe. And I just felt ready for a change. And this was a challenge too, right? Because I hadn't taught adults before. So I thought, sure, I'll give it a try. And they seem to have a really good support system here for new teachers. So new to adult teaching anyways.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's great. Well, tell us about the program.
So the program is, I did look it up, Chad, is 39. This is its 39th year of running in some type of rendition. It originally started as Oris Kroniski started it, and it started as kind of a general science first year with land courses intermixed, and then they really focused on land and acquisition in their second year. That's sort of how it began. And then over time, as demand ebbed and flowed, and it really peaked there for a while, we had, I think, at our max 74 students. It became very much more specialized. And we had a suite of, say, 20 courses, all land specific, right? With just a little bit of soils, water, and the basic, I'd call them land sciences, if I could call them. The focus got heavier on the land and a little lighter on the science, right? Now, as you know, with our economic situation, let's call it, the demand personnel has changed. It's shifted, and our numbers aren't near what they are to support a full two-year program. So the decision was made to finish out our full diploma program last year, and then this year to rejig it and get our students being part of the land and water program. So the graduates will actually graduate with a land and water diploma with a major in surface land management. So what that'll look like is first year will be those general land science type courses, and then the second year will be more land specific courses.
Okay. And what are the other alternatives? I'm just curious, in the major, what would people major in aside from? Mm-hmm.
So that is also being tweaked, but currently they can choose from reclamation remediation major. They can choose rural land use planning, and they can choose environmental stewardship, and then they can choose surface land management. So currently there's four majors.
Yeah.
I think once they're there's a cycle, and we go through our programming and change things up every, 5 to 10 years kind of thing to make sure they're all viable or earlier if necessary. And so land and water is being rejigged as we speak, actually. So those majors may look a little different. Ours won't. Ours should stay the same as it's new.
I think it's great. It gives the students options. And I think there's enough synergies between those different options. At least three of the four you mentioned, I can see maybe less on the environmental stewardship, but like from a practical standpoint, I think the other three probably have lots of synergies. How do the courses as they're set up today prepare a student? Like what, I'm just curious if you can maybe explain the logic.
All our programs at the college have an industry advisory committee. And these are volunteers from industry. And the land agent or the surface land management group meets twice a year, fall and spring. And we look at these courses on a pretty regular basis and say, is this meeting the need? So what are you seeing out there? What do you need? And so over the years, it's changed a little bit. In the beginning, there was a lot more focus on survey, how you survey and all that. That's changed more into, can you read a plan, right? And so that's just a very simplistic example of how we've had to change things. Regulatory courses, right? They become more and more necessary. And of course, the challenge is always, to what depth do we go with a junior student who has no industry experience, most likely? So, you don't want to overwhelm them, but they still have to have a solid footing about what this is and that you can't just ignore it. So these are some of the evolutions we've seen, as well as all these alternative energies, right? Solar, wind, power. We never saw those 39 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. So now we have to make sure we have a space for those. And then this might lead into another question, Chad, but the challenge there, of course, is those courses represent activities that are not covered off in the surface rights piece or in the Land Agents Licensing Act. Mm-hmm. And so, a big draw for our students is I can get licensed when I'm done. I can write my exam, right? The problem is a lot of the activities and functions that a land person today does are not covered in the Act, and the Act needs updating. And I don't think any listener on this program would disagree with that. It's in need of change. And so we walk a fine line trying to meet that need that the Land Agents Licensing Act has dictated and the Surface Rights Act with what we are presenting in our curriculum, because currently it sits that 2 years of post-secondary related will qualify you to write your exam. That's how it's basically worded. Mm. And our program is recognized as one of those. It's a tick box. So when we make changes, have to make Land Agents Licensing make sure they're part of that discussion. So they also sit on our advisory committee, right? So that we don't go down a pigeonhole and realize, oh, now we don't meet their standard, right? And they'll cancel our 2 years.
It does, actually. I think it's it's kind of an issue that you're bringing light to. And I think it's important that industry realizes that too. If you're trying to evolve the program to stay current with the needs today, and one of the, I guess I'd say, governing or regulatory bodies is not keeping pace with that, it creates a bit of an issue. And, you know, it's an exciting time to be in energy. A lot of different needs arising from that people in the land business can address. So hopefully that's something that will get sorted in time. I want to go back to just the preparation. When a student enrolls in the program, and just if considering the different courses that they'd be taking, what are you preparing them for? And maybe high level, you know, what are the different buckets, I guess, mm-hmm. is maybe a better way to approach it. What are they being prepared for in going through the course content?
So the guiding lens I use when I look at what courses are we going to have in our suite of courses is this going to prepare a student for a junior role in most of our land departments and broker companies? So do they have those basic building blocks under their feet before they walk through those doors? So things like, do they understand, you know, the importance of land titles and how they're set up and what they represent? Can they read a survey? Do they understand what's on there? Can they match the two, a title and a survey? Can they put those things together? Do they understand, you know, the difference between private land and public lands and the different governing bodies there? And then the whole regulatory layers, if it's, you know, provincial, federal, municipal, whatever, do they understand that? And I think the biggest tool I'm trying to teach them now, and I've definitely changed my focus a little bit, is on where do I go for more information? So this stuff changes all the time, but do I understand where to draw? Like, where are my pools of information I can draw from? What's a good resource? Where, you know, those types of things, building up their toolkit, I guess you could say, to use a canned phrase, but making sure they've got some tools there that, depending, because it's so hard to know what they're going to do when they're done, because things are changing quickly and some are finding work in different fields that we don't necessarily specifically cater to, mm-hmm. but our students have transferable skills. And so I tell them all the time, here's why you should care about this. This is the ways I've seen people use this skill. Even right now, I'm teaching an ecology course and some people go, what? But it has lots of transferability. And we talk about, it isn't just about the animals, but it's also about how we manage animals and manage the landscape, and people are a big part of that, and the politics with that and the decision making. And you as a land person, you should be able to connect with all those levels at some level. And so that's what I'm trying to prepare them for. Mm-hmm. That's my, the way I go at it. Yeah. I used to be really focused on content, and it's still important, but I know personally I've backed off on that a little bit and looking a little bit more at, are you listening? Are you really catching this? What are you really hearing? And, you know, how are you communicating that back? And I spend a lot more time on some of those little communication details than I've ever spent before. Mm-hmm. So things like a student emails me and says, why did I get this on my test? Period. No introduction, no thought to the quote tone in the email, nothing, right? So, you know, before I would have just either ignored it or answered it. And now I answer it, but I always put something like, and a please would really get you far, or have you thought about rephrasing this, or, you know, and it takes time to do those little things, but I think they make better communicators once they're out in the field. And I know industry appreciates that because those little comments are irreparable sometimes with some people, right? It just takes 1 second to make that bad impression, and then you got to live with it for a long time. So
when I reflect back on my experience in the program, which was 1993 to 95, I remember the communications courses, and looking back then, I was not equipped to, I would say my communication skills were below average, and especially in written form. And what I see today is such a need for people to be able to articulate their ideas and observations, both, you know, face to face, but also in writing. And this, I would say, especially the written component is often a struggle. And mm-hmm. from what we see, you know, and I think that has changed from when I first started in the industry to today. Things have just, the bar has been raised. What are you seeing in the students that come through the program today with those skills? Are they coming in with an innate ability in that communication realm, or are there lots of students like myself who are coming in and needing a lot of work?
It's interesting you bring this up because I'm living it right now, and I call it the great divide. There's a group that's strong, and then the rest are not, and there's hardly anybody in between. It's that's the year this year. It's like the group that's not doesn't even hardly know where to start. It's a cut and paste world, mm-hmm. right? And so that's been really challenging. And you know, you have to rework your work. Well, what do you mean I have to rework my work? Well, it's showing up 90% plagiarized, because we have little systems now that can check that. I mean, you kind of know when it's written in a way you wouldn't ever imagine the student speaking that way, right? So you kind of get a glimpse, but this system actually will run it through. But and the ones that are strong writers, I mean, they just look so much stronger against the pack because it's this great split. You know, short answer is writing is definitely a challenge for many of our students. Mm-hmm. It's a big challenge. It's a challenge to teach too, because nobody likes to practice their writing. And a 19-year-old is really not interested in that, right? And so if your course shows a ton of communication classes, they all, oh, I'm not taking that. So I'm trying to go at it where it's tucked in with all the other courses. So, okay, you're taking ecology and you like plants and animals, great. And now you're going to do some mini research. Don't womp them with the big one, just little ones. And you're going to learn to cite where you get stuff from. And you're going to learn to write a paragraph. And start small and then build them up. And I'm learning I actually have to teach how to do that, not assume that they know how, because they don't.
Yeah.
Bottom line. So, I know many like guys that graduated with me too. And after, they've all struggled with their writing. It's been an ongoing challenge. And you know, there's a whole legal aspect to that too. There has to be some accuracy and some, just let alone organization of thought, right?
So I'm looking for a clue here, and I'm wondering if you're seeing any. Those that come into the program that are stronger with the written communication, is there something about their background that you can tie it to, or is it really random?
No, there's a couple indicators I've seen that I've noticed. I mean, I'm not privy to the history of my students usually, unless I really probe that. But the ones that tend to be stronger writers also tend to be the ones that seem to have better organizational skills. So they're the ones that are keeping track of stuff in their agenda, or even using an agenda or some type of organizational tool. They're the ones that want to understand the breakdown of an assignment. So they kind of have a methodical approach to things, just naturally. They're the ones in lab that want to know what's first, what's second, what's third, you know, whereas my weaker writers, not all of them, but many, will just be like, okay, so what are we doing? And they just want to rush into it, right? So, and it almost reflects in their writing, right? Like, it's like this rush of ideas in no organization at all. I mean, pages that are one paragraph long, like, it's just crazy, right? So chunking information. And students that get overwhelmed as well, that I find once there's like lots getting dumped on them, if they don't have those organizational skills, they stress out and fall apart, and they can't get organized almost, right? Like their fight flight's in high mode and they can't organize themselves. And it's almost the same in the writing. It's like, I've got this flood of information. I don't know how to organize it. And so I just throw it all down, or I cut and paste it and send it in and hope it's good enough, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there's something there for sure. I'm not pointing fingers at the education system they've had before, but I don't know how much time's really been spent on that. And to give really good feedback to students individually when you have a class of 30 plus, that's really hard. for a teacher to do, you know?
Yeah.
Because some of them really need to slow down and pick apart sentences and paragraphs. And that's hard. That's like what we call heavy lifting work, right? You gotta,
yep.
you gotta bite into it. It's really not fun.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to do it. So they avoid it. And yeah.
I see it. My, mm-hmm. my experience, I was a terrible writer. I even remember one of my friends in college telling me that at college one time. It was 3 years after I'd graduated, well, maybe four, and I had landed a job in-house with a company I'd worked for when I was working for a consulting firm. And the one day the manager came to me and he said, "Chad, I don't want you to take this the wrong way,
but
we're wondering if you would be interested in taking some writing courses at the U of C." And so I, of course, said yes and took a couple of courses. But it really wasn't until I was in a position where I had to write more often that I really started to fine tune that and, you know, work on that as a craft. And it is definitely something that we are missing in our business today. So for, you know, if there's students that are tuning in today, a great way to set yourself above the pack is to be able to present your ideas in a very well-formed way. I want to talk about one. I have a question around innate ability for you. And then I'd like to go into more of the evolution of the program. Innate ability in the students that are coming into the program, are you seeing any clues there? And what I mean is there certain abilities that people just sort of inherently have coming into the program that you find set them up really well to work in this type of field?
Yeah, I think there's some that I, as I look at grads, say that have been out for 5 and 10 years that are still working, you know, what are some of the common denominators, right? And I mean, timing's a big piece of it, but there's definitely some really inherent things like, are you a person of integrity? So if you said you're going to do it, did you try your darndest to follow up? Are you displaying the kind of honesty you need to display? Because I find the students that are, I don't know how to say this, the students that put on a persona and go out, they don't last long, right? It doesn't, there has to be some genuineness there for them to last. And also that desire to be an ongoing learner. I don't think in land you're too effective if you aren't always pursuing sort of some new interests, some new knowledge, because things are changing and you have to go after that. And so some students have that and some have the sit back. And I'm finding the ones that are more pushed forward, not in an aggressive way, but just like curiosity, right? They have a natural curiosity in them. I see them still working and I see them doing really interesting things in their careers, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, depending on how you measure success, definitely that natural curiosity comes through. And I don't know how you teach students that. I think it's just something in them that they say, hey, I'm kind of curious about that and I'll pursue it, right?
Yeah, it sounds like a mindset thing.
Yeah.
I think that's great. Again, for a student that, you know, mindset, you can change your mindset. So I think that's a great clue. Let's talk about the program and how it's changed. What's changed in the program from when you went through it, which is around the same time I went through it, and the program today?
I think we're trying more to bring in examples and projects where students are seeing more of the full picture rather than just documents class or just law class or just. So one of the goals is sort of to build that base knowledge, but then to try a practical application. And I think as I look back now, of course, I'm looking back through different lenses. I was a student then, so I saw it different maybe, they tried then too, but just these projects have so much more complexity. So one of the things I like to do, and I've been trying to do over the last few years, especially is get industry to come in and talk about a project they're passionate about or that they've done in the past and that their company's fine with them sharing. And they share it with the students. So the first class they come to, they'll introduce their project, what it was and where it was and some of the challenges. And then the next time they, and then they'll leave the students with a task to do. So it might say it's a pipeline. So we'll break it up into legs and each little group of students will have a leg to work on. And they'll have to talk, and then he might, the industry person might say something like, okay, I want you to write down all the regulatory thoughts you have that we'd have to cover here, and then what paperwork we need to do, and then what the next step would be. And so then the next time we meet with that industry person, they have that prepped, and they share that back with the whole group and the industry person. And it's sort of like a coaching thing, and we coach them through it. And I'm there to help, you know, make sure they have the docs to work on and make sure we've FOIP'd it or whatever we need to do. And then help the students, you know, well, remember you talked about this or that. And so this is really great in other provinces. So like BC and Canada used to bring a team in from BC and they would talk about, you know, the BC departments, that would be their lead. And then the next time they would talk about, okay, now this is your special little case. What are you going to do here? Knowing what you know now. And so the students would work through it kind of like a workshop and then they debrief with industry. And we've done those over the years and the students really, really like that. Industry likes it. They get to see the students in action and hear how they're processing things. And for industry that's looking for people, they really love that because now they get to see how this student thinks, how they work with others or don't or whatever, right?
If you look back on the skill set required, let's even say 39 years ago when the program started and the skills required today, what's changed?
A few things. One of the thoughts I have too is like, we're not growing any more land and many of our farmers aren't farming now or they're farming and doing something else. So that client, you know, the classic agriculture client has changed. And I think the degree of sophistication has gone way up from what it was when we first started. I don't know if that's a fair comment with you, Chad, but to me, landowners are way more sophisticated where they're getting information from, the size of their operation, the technologies they're using, the markets they're connected to, and the time they have available to talk to you has definitely diminished, I think. Mm-hmm. And so you better make sure that that time is well-structured and quality for them as well for you, right? And so be ready to roll. You can't go in and just use charm. That just doesn't cut it anymore. In fact, it's almost dangerous to hire charming people, I think. Likeable is one thing, but the charmer just doesn't fly anymore with these guys. They don't have time for that.
Yeah.
So that, as well as we have more, like a lot of the farms are getting bigger, right? And a lot of the clients aren't even farming, right? They're lawyers and doctors. And so again, that, you know, it hammers home the importance of being able to communicate well and to communicate at a professional level. Yes, drinking coffee and chatting is still really a base skill. But again, when you go into a lawyer's office to meet them to talk about their properties, that's not what it's about now, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to amp up your game. And so I think that has definitely shifted over the last 30 odd years.
I would agree. That makes sense to me. Again, mm-hmm. based on what we're seeing. And I love mm-hmm. the distinction between being likable and charming. That's a great distinction. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, and I think you kind of alluded to it earlier around things that could be improved. I think you kind of hinted at it, but I want to ask you directly: what do you think could be improved right now within the program?
So we're rebuilding that second year right now. Right? Like as we speak, those courses are being looked at and industry is aware of that suite of courses that our industry advisory committee knows. And so I think one of the things is how to integrate those communication skills into all those courses and not just lump it all in a communication course and say, here, now you'll know how to communicate, but rather build it in scenarios or mock scenarios right into the courses. So they actually have to produce some quality writing and maybe presentation skills as they go. I think traditionally it's sort of like, I got all this content, I don't have time for that. But you know, this conversation with you today just solidifies that for me, that it's hard work, but we're going to have to find a way to do it consistently in all the courses. So the students just can't dodge it. It's just, they've got to take it on and they got to see that this is real. We're not just making this up, that industry needs this. And, you know, here's our speaker telling you that you're going to send them an email about this. And so it better be good. Right. Mm-hmm. So kind of putting some real practical values on that.
What's occurred to me over the years I've been in this type of work is just how important this role is. You know, I think as a young person coming out of college, I didn't quite grasp that. And I think part of the reason for that is that I wasn't thinking very broadly about what access is, and probably thinking about it more just in terms of the oil and gas industry. So today I look at access much more broadly, and when I do that, I see this, there's a very critical nature to it. And the reality is that if you don't have access, there is no project. There are certain industries where we have so-called hammer right of entry, but lots of industries, especially the emerging industries, you don't have that. So you really have to be skilled. And I think that is a good message to hit home with the students, that look, like, this is very important work. And you're really, as an access professional, you really have quite an impact on, you know, you're the cause of economic development by enabling that access. So I think that's an important message to hit home to the students and to industry too, so that it's not taken for granted. I should get off my soapbox now. Well, a couple of questions here around industry involvement. What can industry do that we aren't already doing to be part of the success of this program and the students coming out of it?
I mean, I have to start by saying industry has been super supportive of this program for years, right? I don't think we could ever say that the surface land program hasn't been supported, because it definitely has, both in person and in donation of time and resource. So I'm super thankful to work with an industry that is so supportive of young learners, and in most cases, young learners. We do have lots of mature students too, but and helping them get their start and helping take on practicum students and helping ask, you know, career investigation questions that the students have, helping to answer those, and always supportive. You know, as we move forward, one of the things we're kind of feeling the impacts from is the industry, our traditional industry of oil and gas, you know, taking the hits it has, and the messaging coming to people is, there's no work. And so then we don't get students coming into the program. And so I think our industry has to message, yes, there is work. It's just different. And that's an indirect help to us, right? Is if the messaging, and that land people need to, or as you call them, access professionals, need to say, you know, need to continue voicing that, hey, we're a super important cog in this wheel. The wheel doesn't turn unless we have access. And that, I think we haven't done a really good job of that. We're just out there meeting with people and making things happen, and nobody really understands. Like my students even said when we had this recent presentation, they said, oh, I had no idea that was even a job, right? Mm-hmm. So why is that? Why aren't we better known, right? Mm-hmm. As a profession kind of thing. So that's another job our industry, I think, has to keep working at, is self-promotion, I guess, a little bit, right? And saying, hey, this is what we do, and mm-hmm. building the understanding there. And then at a practical level at the college, when we run our practicums, anybody that can take students, we just do a really short, right now it's 4 days. We're looking at changing that to 2 weeks based on feedback. So people that are willing to take on our students, that, you know, that's a huge way you can help, because the students, it all becomes real for them once they set out on a practicum experience, right? Mm-hmm. And we've had students go all over the place with that experience, right? So some days in the field, some days in the office, sometimes just one or the other in different provinces. And so it can be a really rich experience for the students. That's one way. And the second way is you know, sit on our IAC if that's something that interests you. Sit on our advisory committee. Our energy industry chair position, Glenn's been running that position here for a few years, but now that will switch over because his term is coming to an end. So we'll be a new person. But if they reach out to you, you know, for sure, or you reach out to them whenever that person is chosen, that's another good way to communicate with the program. And then if you have a project that you were super passionate about, or you thought that students could really gain something from hearing about it, you know, feel free to connect with me and we'll make that happen. And we can take different formats. It can be a one-time delivery. We can turn it into a little project for the students. I'm open to all that. And I'll do the legwork. If industry wants to present their project more as an activity, I can make it an activity kind of thing, right? Mm. They just have to share their expertise. That's it.
Yeah.
I can do all the educating pieces.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Totally.
So those would be the best ways. And then, I mean, with this COVID, we hope to be able to run our Palliser event again, because it's such an important networking opportunity. And I feel really flat that we haven't been able to do it for a couple of years now. Mm. And I'm really looking forward to getting that back and running again, because it's so key for the grads and the industry to mix, right?
It is. Well, and it comes back to also one of the skill sets, in that I remember the first networking event that I went to, and it was quite intimidating. I thought, and we were a much smaller industry at the time too, but such an important skill set, and in addition to the importance of connecting with industry. So I agree with you there. And you know, the other thing I heard there is just the bigger picture, coming back to ensuring that the students understand the bigger picture context of what they're being trained to be able to do, and the impact they can have in being trained well. And I think if we can help them understand the bigger picture, it may help them take certain things more seriously. I've got a couple more questions for you. What advice would you give someone considering a career in land access?
I think one of my pieces of advice would go back to what I said it makes a successful land person, and that is the ability to ask good questions and then make sure you've understood right. So that whole communication, but it's also mindset, right? Like, are you curious enough to care to ask a deeper question, right? And to understand that. And as I see our landowners change, and as I see more international ownership and that type of thing, I think that's a skill that's going to become really important. Is you have to really make sure you're understood, but that you understand them as well. And I think that's where it's at for me. That would be my quick answer. I have lots of other ideas, but that would be my first one.
Mm-hmm. I like it. You know, on that note, I think that's where we'll land.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, Nicole, I'd love to have you on the show again in the future, and we can talk more about this. But I think for today, this is a good place to land.
Okay.
And really appreciate you and the work you're doing, and for coming on today. Olds College has, you know, it was a life-defining moment for me as a young lad, and I know it has been for a lot of other people, and it's quite an entrepreneurial environment. And so for our listeners, if they're unaware of the college and all the entrepreneurial things they do there, I really encourage them to look real broadly at the college itself. And it's a great environment to learn in. So I'm an advocate, forever grateful. And I know many of my colleagues and peers are too. So Nicole, thank you for coming on today. And I look forward to catching up with you soon.
My pleasure, Chad. It's been great. That hour just flew by.
It always does. Okay. Bye for now.